Hey everybody, my name is Juke, and I am a addict and alcoholic. Hi everybody. All right, so I'm enjoying this new forum. It's going to have a bit of a learning curve to it. Chris, if I wind up being difficult to hear, will you wind up, let me know? Thank you, bud. So I want to start with generally how I used to start talking about my story. When I'd mention what it was like, I would talk about my actual specific life experiences, and it was almost like a bit of a comparison and trying to show off about what I've done and the little adventures and the stories. And those are kind of, I found those interesting when I wasn't in sobriety, those stories, and I found them mildly interesting when I was new in sobriety. But as I've gotten deeper into it, I find that's actually not the interesting part for me. The interesting part is what I had in common with everybody else. Well, we've all had these different paths. It's the feeling that we had right before we jumped off and joined the life of sobriety. That's, I found, what the strongest part of what my past has to offer. I should start with originally what got me into drinking and into drugging and alcohol, I believe, is something similar that a lot of us have, which is this idea that I didn't want to be just another one of the cattle lining up at the ranch just to get slaughtered cow after cow, day after day, beast after beast as the sun rotates around the world. I didn't want that predictable lifestyle. I wanted something different, and I wanted to taste the world. And that was great. At the beginning, I wound up being like a lot of people around a lot of different artists, people that spoke differently, acted differently, led wild lifestyles. And that was like fantastic. It had a lot of those late night deep conversations and all that sort of bit. That's all fun to philosophize about. And then generally it came with drinking a bit, doing some drugs, and that was fine. But as time went on, I found that drinking a bit and doing some drugs began to be not my thing. I wound up being more of the staying up later past everybody else, no longer into it for the conversations with people, but more into it for getting messed up. And then that shifted the group of friends that I was hanging around with to being more the type that get messed up. And then all of a sudden it seemed like those ideals that I had of leading a different life wound up shifting. It no longer had to do with leading a different life, trying an experiment, doing something new, wild, and exciting that used my mind, and also that had to do with being around artists that played music and people that wrote. Those people wound up not being the style that obviously want to lead that sort of lifestyle that I wound up leading. Something that I think a lot of addicts and alcoholics also have in common is that they talk about burning the candle at both ends. And I believe that the addict and the alcoholic doesn't want to burn the candle at both ends. We just like to grab the whole sucker and throw it in the fireplace and watch the sucker burn. Like, there's something inside of me and there's something inside of us that says we want to see it all. We want to see it go. We want to see the explosion. We want to see what is out there and what it has to offer. And that drive wound up being a beautiful thing for a long time, but just pushing me further than where sanity could tolerate. I wound up, and this is the part where I feel like I have that I have in common with a lot of addicts and alcoholics that I talk to. There's that idea when I was a young man, when I was 14, 13, 15, of that idea of what does it mean to be a man? Like, what am I going to look like as a man? What am I going to look like when I'm older? And that idea was sort of somewhat simple, romanticized. It involved having a long-term girlfriend slash wife, being good, kind, loving, the type that brings flowers and always has something kind to say. It involves somebody that treated the fellow man properly, and it involved being somebody that just, I wanted to be a good person when I was younger. And where I wound up was nowhere near that ideal. I wound up just having that life wound up at the end getting me to the point where I felt like I was drowning. Like I don't know if anybody's ever swum in the ocean before and being taken and done like body surfing or anything like that and being hit by a big wave. Sometimes you get wrapped up in the wave and it spins you around so hard and so with such force that it knocks the wind out of you, and you don't know, and I've had this where I don't know which direction is up, and I'm holding my breath as long as I can in the water. I've had all the air knocked out of me. Everything's spinning around. I don't know which direction to start swimming so I can save my lungs, which are begging me to get a breath of air. My feet are paddling towards the sand, trying to touch the ground so I can push up and get air. And I've felt like if I wait another second, I'm going to suck in that salt water because I'm literally seconds away from drowning. And I felt that the end of my using it, I've got to find the ground and I've got to push up and I've got to get a breath of air. Otherwise I'm going to start sucking salt water. That desperate feeling was daily. And then day after day, week after week, month after month. And so it's a miserable feeling. It's, I remember, at the end of a long night, getting marker or getting pen and writing on my hand, no, so that way the next day maybe I would, I don't know, be loading up a crack pipe or getting a bottle and I'd be like, here I go again, and be like, oh look, it says no. Oh, that'll save me, that'll stop me from using. I couldn't figure out what was wrong with me, like how I couldn't remember this sort of pain, the struggle, that idea that I can't do this one more day. I can't do another night of living like this. I can't make it. I'm either going to mentally break or else I'm going to physically break. If I push it, just if this happens for one more day, I can't make it. And that feeling of about to shatter mentally and physically, just continuing, like, I can't do this for one more day. That feeling for a week, and again a month, and again month after month. There was, of course, that what came with it was with being an addict and alcoholic, simple things became real difficult. The idea of having to actually having money on a payday that isn't all spent up, and having bills and getting out a checkbook and writing checks to pay these bills, seemed like an insurmountable task. The simple stuff, just like getting registration on my truck. I mean, that's like, who can't get registration on a truck? That just, you go get it inspected and then you take it in, you send it to the state and they send you a registration sticker. But there are so many different things and layers that I had to do and hoops I had to jump through just to be able to get the inspection so I can get the registration, that the stuff that seemed like it, that now that it's so simple, just was incredibly difficult. And it's a desperate place to be. I thankfully had a group of friends and family show up one day and tell me that they thought that I didn't represent my true self and that I needed to get sober. They were very nervous I was going to tell them to go bleep off. And I so badly needed somebody to throw me a rope, that I said, yes, I'll go to rehab. And it's probably one of the best things that's ever happened to me in my life. I knew that I had been beaten. I always had this feeling of myself that you could put me anywhere in the world with no money, not knowing anybody, and I'd be able to come out of it not too long with a bit of cash in my pocket and a place to stay and a pretty lady on my elbow. And I always felt that each time I ever got knocked down, that I'd be able to pop back up again. And I just wasn't there anymore. I was beaten. I didn't know I had a surrender flag. And I was waving that surrender flag. I was beat. I don't know if anybody's ever seen Cool Hand Luke, a great movie where one of the guys is in a fight and he keeps getting knocked down by the prison bully. And he keeps getting up, and it happens over and over. He gets knocked down, and he gets back up. He gets knocked down, and gets back up. I always kind of felt like I was that guy that could always get back up again. And this was something that knocked me down, and I was not able to get up again. So when they said that there's a solution to the hole that I was in, I was excited. I was ready for it. I said, I need a different way. The first part, of course, winding up in a rehab, comes with a whole bunch of guilt and shame. it's just kind of funny looking back on it now, but the shame of all my friends now know that I'm such a drug addict that I wound up in a rehab. And it's like, well, they didn't figure out you were a drug addict before that. I thought I was hiding it when obviously I wasn't. And then the guilt and shame with family members, and then the guilt and shame inside of myself for being so far away from that man I thought I could have been when I was a young boy, when I was 14, 13, being so far away from that projected image of what one was supposed to do and how one was supposed to act. And I was told something beautiful in rehab by a counselor, and they said, look, you got to get over that. You got to stop with the guilt and shame and say, I put it aside for now so you can step forward and start doing some of the work that needs to be done to be able to get myself to a place where I'd be able to have mental peace. So he actually said, why pick yourself up by your bootstraps? You need to put that guilt and shame aside so you can go further forward. And I thought, what a dick. And then I thought about it, and it really made sense. It wasn't a hard reach for me to realize that my way didn't work. That one suggestion to me was to look at where I was a year ago before I got sober, the year before that, 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 and look at where that progression is going and where, if I didn't change my ways, where I thought I'd be in one more year. And that was not a place I did not want to keep down that progression. It's also said that was me that was driving myself down in that progression, that I had lost choice in the matter, and that I needed to quit being the one driving the cart. Originally, it started being a path that I was on, and that path turned into a road, and that road then wound up turning into a rut. Then that rut wound up becoming a valley, and that valley wound up becoming a canyon. Then that canyon wound up becoming just wide enough for me to squeeze by sideways, with it being nothing but cliffs on either side. And I had no movement. So I was very happy to take the alternative of a new life, and to know that I no longer had to be in that rut at the bottom of that canyon with no movement. Part of it was I was told that I had to had a serious look at myself, that I was the only one that could judge myself as an addict or alcoholic. And I came to the conclusion that I was an addict and alcoholic, that I had to accept it all the way inside of myself. And at first I went, yeah, I'm an addict, alcoholic. Yeah, of course, next step. But I've found that what I've had to do is go back and actually more closely examine that and say to myself, all right, if I'm an addict, if I'm an alcoholic, then that means that my mind is an alcoholic's mind. My brain is an addict's brain. That my blood that goes through my body is an addict's blood. That my flesh is an addict's flesh. And my bones are addict's bones. The way my mind operates is an addict's mind. And that means head to toe, I'm an addict and I'm an alcoholic. I couldn't just say, yes, I'm an addict, alcoholic. What's the next step? I had to accept that all of me is. And that the only medical cure for that, which there is apparently a medical cure for that, is a new brain, new flesh, new bones, new blood. All right, I guess that doesn't sound like much of a cure. And having accepted that so thoroughly inside of myself has sometimes been the most beautiful backstop and saving block that I have when I start to slip backwards, because I know that's something that won't change. And from there, once I've accepted that, that means that I either continue on the path that I was on or go forward in a way that makes myself safe with the condition that I've got. So when I got out of rehab, I wound up in CA and AA. I like both of those. I also like any program that winds up bringing alleviation to suffering addicts and alcoholics. And so I don't look at one as better than the other. This just happens to be the ones that I fell into. And I took it damn seriously. I took it that seriously because I had to. I did not want to go back to the way I was. And I felt that it was life and death. And I really wasn't, I was so not enjoying myself that I needed a new direction. And I was excited about that new direction. At first it was lonely when I got out of rehab. I typically was a pretty social person and I didn't know how to tell the difference between, I realized that my detector of what's good and what's bad was not a very good detector. So I decided to cut everything out of my life unless I was sure 100% that it was a positive influence in my life that would help me go down this journey of sobriety. And that meant that my social life immediately turned into only AA meetings, meeting with my sponsor, going to work, and king-size Kit Kat bars and TV. it was interesting, though, as I progressed through the steps. I got a sponsor. I progressed through the steps. I thought when I got into meetings that all of a sudden you'd go to meetings and everybody would be like, hey, let's go out to a restaurant. Let's go get coffee. Let's all hang out. And for me, it wasn't that quick. And I actually took time, which makes sense, but it took time for me to develop relationships with people. And I made sure that the ones that I got around were people that I did want to develop relationships with. And so I'd have like somebody that I'd go out with on Tuesday, maybe somebody on Thursday, and then everything else was work and meetings. Then all of a sudden I'd have somebody after the meetings on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And slowly over time, I began to get this life that was very slow to create, but that was full of good golden people that also wanted this style of sobriety that I desperately needed. And I kind of realized one day that I wasn't as lonely anymore, that not only I didn't have as much chaos and constant running around crazy friends to hang out with as I did before sobriety. However, the ones that I did get to be around in that initial stage were really golden people that I still, I'm not friends with a lot of those people anymore. I am with some of them, But I'm thankful to each one of them for the time that they spent with me in those early stages. I feel like for me, the early stages of recovery were, I don't know if anybody's ever gotten a real bad cold and just been like down and out and sick, like laid up in bed for like 3 days with a fever and feeling miserable. And then I've had that, and I'll wake up, I'll get up, and I'll be like, oh, I feel good enough to leave the house now. So I'll go down to the store and pick up a pack of smokes. And so I'll walk down to the store, go in, and all of a sudden, I that certain level of confidence won't be there, because I'm still shook up by how sick I was for those 3 days. Recovering from my addiction and going to rehab had that same sort of feeling, like it shook up my confidence in myself a bit. And that actually wound up being okay. Humbling, and it made me listen. It made me feel like I wasn't the guy that had all the answers, and I had to start listening to some other people so I could learn what they had to say. And I'm very thankful for being shook up like that. As I went through the steps, I felt I was more of a slow grower spiritually, and until I got to maybe step 10 and 11, and that's where I did my nightly review, my morning meditation, and then and also my making sure that I carry my spiritual practice throughout my day, and when I fail on that, to correct it. That was the first time that I had, for me, I had a real leap forward in my spirituality. The idea of sitting every night and going over my day and seeing where I was selfish, dishonest, frightened, if I owed somebody an apology, what I could have done better, if I was thinking of myself most of the time, and then thinking about those that I was grateful for, thinking about those that need help and need my thoughts and prayers, examining my day and seeing where I'd fallen short and seeing what I had done well, began to paint for me a target of that guy that I wanted to be. It actually, by reviewing my day and seeing where I'd fallen short, it created a pathway for me to be able to see that target of what my higher power wanted of me. And it's wild because I never even knew where the target was. Like I had my bow and my arrow, and I was shooting this way and I was shooting that way. And this is by doing step 11 and by doing step 10, it allowed me to actually know more clearly what I was aiming for and what direction I was aiming. Now, it was badass to finally have a bow and arrow and having been shooting it all my life and finally be able to see which direction I'm supposed to shoot the damn thing. And then in my morning meditation, I feel for me, morning meditation didn't mean sit quiet for 10 minutes and go om. For me, morning meditation meant looking at the 24 hours ahead, looking at what I had lined up for my day, and looking at in my nightly review where I had fallen short in the day beforehand and how I need to ask of my higher power to guide me so that I quit repeating a certain action. That can either be somebody I'm working with that irritates the shit out of me, that I'm allowing to get under my skin and saying, hey, may I show them love and tolerance instead of just getting irritated. It might be that when I'm hanging out with a couple of guys, I tend to make some jokes that sort of put somebody down because that's my humor, and that doesn't represent my higher power. And when I do my nightly review, I see how that doesn't represent my higher power. So I ask, hey, when I'm hanging around, I don't want to do those sort of jokes anymore because it doesn't. And I really felt that combination, that 1-2 combination, was one of the strongest things that rocketed me forward. Now, once I started sponsoring, that's when I began to see some of the true benefits. I should say that. Before I got sober, I felt a bit like life had lost its flavor. If it was a beautiful day and I was invited to go do something wonderful and the birds were chirping, I'd open up the door and it was all in black and white and I had no interest in joining the day anymore. Like life had lost a bit of its flavor. It was like chewing on cardboard. I didn't have a taste for it anymore. And going through the steps and surrounding myself with these good people and getting closer, you know, on the path of where I thought I should be, kind of like they say that your imagination will be lit up again. Your mind will be lit up again. And some of the really basic things began to be a ton of fun again. Like just taking a walk with the dog down by the stream and grabbing rocks and throwing them in the stream. When I was at the end of my using, that sounded like work. And now this, like doing that is just one of the most simple, beautiful things. And it's amazing how it tickles the mind with these real basic actions. Sponsoring. One thing about sponsoring I found was that the difference between a good sponsor and a great sponsor isn't as important as the work that I put in. So if I spend my life looking for the best sponsor there is, it's going to be a waste. If I find a good sponsor, but then I put in the work and I put in and I read through the big book and I try to see what I think the work is required of me to do, that's where the true strength in growing lies. Also, I found that with sponsoring that nobody's perfect. A sponsor isn't perfect. I'm not perfect. And when I hear people complain about their sponsor, my response is, all right, cool. Become a sponsor and correct those actions. Do it better. Do it the way that it says in the big book and do it and do as good of a job as you think you can do of it. Now, when I went through the 12 steps or 1 through 11, as I said, a lot of it was yes. Do you believe that you're powerless over drugs and alcohol and your life would become unmanageable? Yes. Next step. That's an easy one. When I actually have to take somebody through it, when a sponsor has to take somebody through it, like I feel like it's my responsibility to understand what I'm asking of my sponsee. So if I say, how are you powerless over drugs and alcohol? I want you to write down 5 to 10 examples. I have to understand in myself how I felt powerless in drugs and alcohol so that I can answer any questions that my sponsee might have. If I'm saying, hey, we should know the doctor's opinion, that means that I need to go and I need to read it so that I can go over it and I understand it, because I'm now becoming the teacher, and it has greater responsibility to be the teacher than it does to be the student, to be able to understand the work. And also I found that there's no better understanding of any material as when you have to teach it, of when you have to take somebody through it. And so that's actually when I began to really understand better what the 12 steps were about, by having to take somebody else through it. Does that make sense? Cool. I wanted to talk about my higher power and faith a tiny bit. Going into rehab, I was a strict atheist. I know a lot of people are agnostic atheists coming to rehab. A lot of people have God, which is a fantastic thing because it's almost like a step ahead. For me, when they said that you had to have a power greater than yourself, at first I was one of those that bristled anytime that there was a meeting that mentioned the word God. I was like, all right, this is not my meeting. I'm going to walk out. I'm done. I'll come back when they're talking about other shit. But that was until I got a better understanding of what higher power was for me. At first, I just said, all right, I'm just going to call the noble virtues of the humankind, like the thing that makes people sacrifice themselves for others when they don't know them. Now, whatever that is, and there's story after story about that occurrence in our past, whatever that is, that's going to be my higher power. And then it progressed to peace, love, and serenity, and a desire for that in myself and a desire for that in other people. And it's never had to get more complicated than that. And so when I'm asking myself, did that action represent my higher power? Did that action represent a desire for other people to have peace, love, and serenity? If it fell short of that, I'm able to see that it doesn't represent my higher power and I need a corrective action. Now, where does that put me if my higher power is peace, love, and serenity? Does that mean that I'm atheist now or agnostic? Or some people say God is peace, God is love, God is serenity. So does that make me religious or believe in God? And I found that to be an absolutely unimportant question for me. That the only thing that needs to be important is my higher power strong enough to guide me in the direction that I need to go to be able to continue on a path of spiritual growth? And if the answer is yes, then I'm good to go. Let's see. I wanted to also say a bit of what it's like now. So my first few years of sobriety, I was definitely a big book thumper. Chris will attest, I would carry my big book into every meeting, is in my hands. I had it one in my car, one at my work, one at my house. And that thing, my big book was probably the dirtiest big book you ever seen, because I carried that around with me everywhere. Like, I was married to the sucker. When it came time to throw myself in a service work, I threw myself head over heels in a service work. I sponsored like a madman. And then I went to a ton of meetings, a minimum of, for the first few years, a minimum of 3 a week, if not more. That's what I really needed. That's what my sobriety had to look like at that point. I don't think everybody's sobriety needs to look that way. And I don't think it's falling short if your sobriety doesn't look that way, but that's actually what I needed. As time went on, I found that that the balance that I needed and I sought became more of a intuition in my actions and in who I was. And so I didn't need to sponsor 3 people at the same time. I would burn myself out if I continued at that pace. And so now I'm at 12 years. It's the best thing that's happened to me. The idea of, I remember hearing it at the beginning, this idea of my sobriety has to be first. My sobriety has to be the most important thing in my life. And I thought, nah, that, you don't understand. That ain't going to happen. Like, I've got a sister. So you're saying that my sobriety needs to be more important than the love I have for my sister? You ain't got that right. I'm sorry. That's not going to happen. But then then it was pointed out to me and I looked at it that when I didn't have sobriety, I was only able to give my sister this much of my love. And that with sobriety, I've got constant love for her and I'm always able to be there for her. And when she's needed me, I've been able to drop everything and fly to where she is and help out her family. I'm always available to her. And I give her so much more of myself by being sober that if sobriety wasn't the most important thing in my life, then I wouldn't be able to have that there for her. And so, does that make sense? It's a comparison of sobriety is not the most important thing in my life, so I can give this much of myself, versus sobriety is the most important thing, so I can give more of myself because there's more to give. And the same is true with my wife and my kids. I'm very happily married. It takes work. I'm very happily married. It takes work. Did I say that? Did I say it takes work? Yeah, it takes work. However, my wife is the first person who, when I entered into the relationship, I tried to follow the suggestions of the big book, strangely, and look at not what I was trying to get out of her for my own ego and sexual satisfaction, but what I could actually add to her life, so I'd quit dating for a while, and I put myself to the test every time I found myself getting a bit flirty. Was, am I just wanting to hook up with this person, or am I actually trying to add something to their life? And unfortunately, most of the answers were, no, I'm just trying to hook up with them. And so I said, well, then that means you can't hang out with them. And it created a lonely period in my life, which involved a lot of reflection about what I'm actually looking for in a relationship. And then that raised my standards for what I'm looking for in a relationship, until somebody met what I was looking for, meaning somebody that was so interesting that I actually wanted to add something to their life and create something beautiful together. I also was the first time I got into a relationship where I didn't need somebody. I think it's okay for people to feel that they complete each other. I think that's a beautiful thing. However, it's the first time I entered into a relationship already complete, and already a whole person. And I married somebody that was already complete, and she was already a whole person. And it became something even more beautiful. To be cheesy, it was a little bit like a flower is already complete and a bee is already complete, but you put the two together and they make something pretty sweet. yeah, I said that. Being able to have this in my life does make me a closer representative of that young man, that young boy, that thought of what he was supposed to be like in a relationship or as a man out in the world and how he's supposed to treat the people around him. This sobriety has me feeling like I'm not doing any disrespect to what that young boy thought that he could be. It's definitely something I'm grateful for. The faith that I have is strong. By faith I mean that the things that I fear the most, like economic insecurity, the fear of the mortality of my parents, the fear of my own mortality, the fears of if my loving wife were to, if something were to happen to her or my kids, or if something were to happen where she entered into a different relationship outside of me, all those fears, because of my faith, I realize I'm going to be all right. Now, by my faith, I mean, if I continue to try to help others to the best of my ability, and I stop having employment, I wind up being a broke ass. I wind up having to live in the tin shed in the back of Bill's place, and all I got is a mattress, sleeping in that tin shed with a little burner, a little hot plate with my can of beans. But if I continue to go out and try to sponsor people, help people that are struggling, give people what I can, and when in conflict with other people, try to represent my higher power, then I am sure that I'm going to be all right inside of that tin shed. I realize that now I've been a better son than I've ever been, and that when my folks do pass on, that I would have fulfilled like what I needed to as a son to them. I also feel that if something were to happen in my relationship with my wife, that I did treat her with love and kindness, and I did represent my higher power in the relationship that I had with her. So while it would hurt if she wound up being with some other person, that I would be all right, because I better have that part that my higher power knew, and I knew that I conducted myself properly in that relationship. So that means that whatever all the biggest fears that life can throw at me, as much as it's going to hurt and sting, and as much as I'm going to cry, I know that I'm on the right path. and that regardless of anything that can happen to me, so long as I stay on that path, that on my deathbed, if someone were to come up and say, Juke, was it worth it? I'd be able to say, yeah, it was worth it. I did it all right. And that's a pretty wild thing. That's what my faith looks like. The last thing I wanted to say was that there was somebody called Sam that went to a meeting in my early sobriety, Liars Club. He was a drunken ass for most of his life. His kids didn't like him. His grandkids didn't know him. And he wound up getting into sobriety very late in life. He was an old man by the time he got into sobriety. He found this. It worked for him, and he gave it to as many people as he could. As an old man, he gave it to as many people as he could. He wound up getting aggressive cancer and dying a few years after he found sobriety, not very many years after he found sobriety. And he said it was all worth it. He found it that late, and just to be able to go through that much pain and put his family through that much pain taught him a lesson that very few other people were able to learn, and he could share that with other people and help bring them to the light. And so I try to be like him. Thanks.